Hurricane Ivan roared ashore near Gulf Shores, Alabama on September 15, 2004, 15 years ago. Little did we know the powerful storm would take more than a dozen lives, injure scores of others, and destroy tens of thousands of homes. Power was knocked out across the panhandle and into Alabama. It would take months for some areas to get back to normal. Well into 2005, blue tarps could be seen on homes throughout Escambia and Santa Rosa counties. It was a storm I'll never forget. I'm Tom Ninestein, managing editor here at WWF. However, when Ivan struck, I was the metro editor with the Pensacola News Journal, which I joined in May 1998. With power out, the staff knew we'd be providing valuable information that our friends and neighbors needed to survive and recover from the storm. With me today are two dedicated former newspaper professionals and two people I'm privileged to call my friends. Katie King was a staff photographer during the storm. Troy Moon was a reporter and columnist with the newspaper. Both helped chronicle the storm's aftermath. I invited them to speak about Ivan and share their memories. Katie, I'll start with you. Part of the strategy of the photo team was to tell the story of this powerful, destructive storm from the air. Tell us about those hours, days, and weeks after Ivan.
Ivan was so widespread that we were having major difficulty trying to get around anywhere. With power lines down, trees down, all the lights were off, so we had to have a lot of police escorts to get around. And we figured out very quickly after the storm that in order to get the most news out to a widespread area and let people know how their area and the neighborhoods were doing, we needed to do it by air because we just simply could not drive. The News Journal did a really excellent job of working with law enforcement and working with the airport to get us up in the air on, I believe, the second day. I think I was in the air probably for three straight weeks in a row, every single day, shooting specific neighborhoods, particularly focusing on the water, the neighborhoods touching the water first, just so that people that had fled the area and were trying to get information about how their houses did, how their homes survived, how their neighbors were, could see through pictures how their area looked.
Do you remember your first trip up in the air?
Yes, it was all waterbound. So we viewed Pensacola Beach for the first time, Perdido Key for the first time. Grand Lagoon was one I really remember. It was just gone. I hadn't really paid that much attention to Grand Lagoon until after Ivan. I didn't really know that much about it, but they were really nice homes that were absolutely gone. The only thing left was foundations. And I remember just that visual. I saw a car that was in a pool. I saw the homes that were directly touching the bayou were mostly just disappeared. I just remember being very shocked.
What struck you the most about that approach being up in the air?
Just the widespread destruction. It looked like a huge tornado had hit everywhere, though. Like it would be the most massive tornado you could think of hit everywhere. And it wasn't just the beach that you would assume the beach would get hit the hardest. But it was the storm surge inland that really, I mean, all the way up to like UWF up here where the bayous stopped, it was really bad.
Probably the most memorable thing was that tractor trailer.
Yes.
That was on the interstate. And that was the first fatality that we had heard about. For people who may not remember, there's this photo of just the back of the semi. The cab had fallen into the water. And we always wondered whether the driver was trying to escape the storm.
What he was doing on that bridge.
Or whether he came across the bridge, that section was already out and it was too late for him to stop and the cab went into the water. I know at one point we had a story that it was estimated that a 40 to 42 foot wave hit the bridge.
Yes, I mean it.
And knocked out those sections.
From the air looking down at the bridge looked like dominoes had fallen over. This scattered, it had shifted the bridge back and forth. The sections of the bridge that were intact were scattered like dominoes, and then there were whole sections that were just had fallen into the bay.
So it was not only airplanes. Didn't you go up in helicopters?
Yes.
At times?
The airplane that I went up the most in was a little Piper Cub. Piper Cub is a very small biplane. It only requires about 65 miles an hour to get off the ground. You could go pretty slow, and we could hover quite a bit in that plane, and then we had several photographers going up at the same time, covering different sections so we could get as much coverage as we could quickly.
I think Gary McCracken, who was the photo editor at the time, said to me that with confidence, we probably photographed every square mile of the area that we cover.
Absolutely.
Right down to the neighborhoods.
Yes. We had a checkoff list every morning on which ones we have not done yet and how much fuel Skip has in his plane, how many he thinks we could check off each box. We were literally trying to make sure every neighborhood got covered so that we could get it up online as quickly as we could.
We were fielding an awful lot of phone calls, and I remember the two most popular ones: how's Joe Patty's doing? How's McGuire's doing? And so I was able to communicate that to the photo staff, and they would. They'd fly over McGuire's. They'd fly over Joe Patty's to make sure. And it's almost...
Get visual proof.
And people were calling about their own neighborhoods.
Sure.
And we said, if we can get there, we'll get a shot and try to put the photos online. That was the one thing that really impressed me about the age of the internet, was that hundreds of photographs, probably thousands, were taken during that time. And we captured them all to put on the website. And so people, for years after that,
absolutely,
Hurricane Ivan photos would show up as one of the top requests on the
website.
It was
one of the rare times that I can remember that I was allowed to just put up raw negatives online and not edited, just get them up so that and label them based on what neighborhood I'm shooting, but raw images straight on the website as fast as you can so that people can come to our website and check in.
And clearly there was an appetite for it.
Absolutely.
Because the more we started to photograph Gulf Breeze or Navarre or Milton, then calls came in, well, what about Pace? What about Molina? What about Century? Places like that. And, you know, if we had the time and the daylight, we were able to accommodate people. Now, Troy, Katie talks about the strategy and the challenge of getting around with trees down, power lines down, police out there making sure that people are off the streets. Reporters had to tell a story, too.
And we didn't get up in the air like the photographers. So there was a lot of groundwork, a lot of driving. I remember early on just getting in my vehicle and navigating what neighborhoods I could. I came out of my house. I lived right by Jerry's drive-in, right behind there. Power was out. There were trees down. But I could get out of the neighborhood. And literally, you start driving to various neighborhoods, the closer ones, you know, because you can get to them. And luckily, I was in Pensacola proper, so I could see the Pensacola neighborhoods. But it took a little while longer for us to get out to some of the other neighborhoods. But I did make it to Grand Lagoon pretty soon, and I spent a lot of time over at Grand Lagoon. It's an old neighborhood, old West Side neighborhood on the water. I know a lot of retired military folks there, and got to know them pretty well. Those homes were just completely gone. Katie saw a lot more. But to me, Grand Lagoon is the neighborhood that sticks out in my head. There was a couple that drowned, and that still freaks me out. How do you drown in your own yard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. You drown in your own front yard. They were literally out there, and they perished. And I met so many retired couples who had everything in their homes. And then the fights with insurance agents afterwards. But for me, early on, it was a lot of driving, a lot of wet notepads, just trying to get wherever I can, you know, and dodging those lines and going to get little snippets of neighborhoods. You couldn't get in and do every neighborhood, but you could give people taste of various neighborhoods. And that's what we tried to do because, I mean, it was hard to get around to so many areas. We let the photos speak a lot to that, but we tried as much as possible to get to those neighborhoods. I remember I got a tack in the recovery, so I got a flat tire afterwards. But, yeah, it was tough. And I remember worrying about gas a lot.
Yeah, our maintenance crew at the paper turned into basically a tire repair shop because there wasn't a day that somebody didn't get a nail or screws or tacks in their
I was living on fix-a-flat.
And fuel was an issue. I remember asking Derek Pivnik if he could go up to the J area to see what was going on up there. And he only had about a half tank of gas, and he wasn't confident he could get back. So Denise Bannister now, was the publisher at the time, and she opened up the gas pumps for us to
that was
so
vital.
We could fuel
right.
up.
I do remember that. And I did gas up there a few times.
She said to me, do you think they'd pay $2 a gallon for gas? I said, Denise, right now they'd pay $5 a gallon.
Just to get access to it. Yeah.
Just so they could get out.
I mean, it is scary. I mean, because you have the responsibility to this community, and you want to get all these neighborhoods, but you really have to worry about the logistics of it all. I mean, with lines down and roads closed.
The bridge gone.
You're trying to find different ways and looking at maps to find shortcuts and back roads to areas. I think overall we did a pretty good job. I think we did the community proud.
What were some of the best things that you saw?
You know, I wrote a column a few days afterwards because, you know, we were all without power, and I didn't want to discount the people who were really suffering. But for many of us, I'd say a good percentage of us, our homes weren't destroyed for a large part of us. We had inconveniences. We went without power. We were cooking those MREs on those little horrible things. But you noticed a lot of people in neighborhoods kind of meeting each other for the first time and helping each other out. I heard of a couple communities, and I know in my neighborhood there was a guy who was grilling out mm-hmm. and serving the neighborhood, and you heard a lot of stories about that. Yeah, it was tough without any electricity for however long it was. It was a while, too. But I wrote, you know, it was the first time in Pensacola you can look up and actually see the night sky, you know. I mean, so you try to find solace in the little things. Not for the people who had homes destroyed and lives really affected, but for so many of us, it was just a horrible inconvenience. We had to go without power. We were nasty, sweaty, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. But I think there was a sense of community and people helping each other, and that's what stuck out.
And I think that lasted for quite some time because even after we got power back, then everyone was dealing with insurance and people whose houses had flooded were pulling everything out of their houses. Neighbors were helping them do that. So I think it brought the community together in a huge way for a long time. It did. We were all struggling for years with the impact.
Yep. Yeah, I remember we would do almost a daily how-to.
Yes.
How-to guide, how to deal with your insurance company, mm-hmm. how to get the drywall. Mm-hmm. out of your house.
How to deal with mold.
How to clean and get rid of mold.
Yeah.
And I think people don't realize a lot of times, just like here at WWF, our basic mission is public service, that we get out and help the community in tough times. I just remember one night when we were working the 12 hours on, 12 hours off kind of shifts, I got home and a neighbor came over to me waving his paper and said, "I got my news journal. It's going to be okay." I said, "Yes, it is going to be okay."
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Because they knew I worked at the paper, and then my neighbors would come over at night just to see what was going on, what they needed to do. Of course, the big question is always, when is power going to come back on? And, you know, there's not a lot that we can do about that. It's just like Gulf Power do their thing and get out of the way.
I think most people were pretty patient with Gulf Power, too. We understood what they were going through. Mm-hmm. And, it was not fun, but we understood.
Yeah, I think you're right, because just like with Hurricane Michael, thousands of poles get knocked down. It's not like you turn off a switch and then, okay, the storm's gone, and you turn the switch back on and everything is fine. Houses couldn't be connected.
Yeah.
So there was that danger. They couldn't go down the street and just reconnect every house because some couldn't be connected. About 2 weeks before we were reconnected, and I think you're right, the neighbors, it was inconvenient because it's September and it's hot, but people really were patient with that. And somebody had a propane grill. They let people come over and make coffee or cook their MREs, things like that.
Yeah, did you have a favorite MRE?
You know, I never had an MRE. I would hear the morning, the chicken tortellini is the best one. And
the old Army Sea Rats, I was in the Army, the Sea Rats were better than the MREs.
Ew. I had plenty of water and Pop-Tarts. That's basically my hurricane kit.
Lots of hot dogs.
How would the coverage change in the digital age now?
Well, it depends on if cell towers are working. Mm-hmm. If the cell towers are working, then you have your handy little photo and video tool in your hand that you can immediately go live with and show people. But when it's that widespread of impact, I think Verizon was working for us, and that was about it. I don't think any of the other cell towers worked around. So it would really depend on your internet coverage and whether or not you have access to it or not. We were given sat phones that seemed to work if you were standing on one foot and in the middle of nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
And the satellite was directly above
yes.
you. I remember there were a few cloudy days where they wouldn't work because they didn't get the clear signal.
Yes, that was fun.
Well, we were in the early age of the digital age anyway. I think I think we were kind of using
the breaking. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's
breaking the live.
I don't know how much different it would be now because we were using all those tools.
Yeah.
Maybe not the live stuff as much like Facebook Live and all that stuff. But a lot of those tools we were using right out of the bat. And I think, like you said, people calling in who had evacuated to see pictures of their homes. I mean, how amazing is that?
Yeah.
Yep.
And we were trying to accommodate as many people as we could. My concern would be the explosion of rumors that would happen.
Sure. That happened.
And
that
social
even happened.
Media.
That even happened 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Probably the best one or worst one, depending on how you look at it,
was the
bodies at the morgue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. The refrigerated trucks filled with bodies at Sacred Heart Hospital.
That was a huge one, and we finally had to address that.
Right.
We had to do a story on it.
At first, we just said, let that go. But it got to be such a prevalent rumor that we did a front page story. I remember that. And Sheriff McNesby at the time said, if anybody knows of anybody who is missing or has died and hasn't alerted anybody, let us know. And to my knowledge, nobody came forward.
No, there were all these claims. I mean, just unsubstantiated, dozens and dozens of
death.
Bodies packed in, you know, in this truck. Well, where are their relatives searching for? Does not anyone care? No, but still, those rumors can be dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, if you hear that and you believe it, there's this mistrust that grows. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really important. I thought Randy Hammer, mm-hmm. I think, wrote the editorial. Maybe it was you. I don't know.
No, it wouldn't have been me.
I think it was Randy. And basically,
if it was good, it wasn't me. So.
I assumed it was you because it was good. I think it was Randy, though. Really strongly worded about the rumors and just how they were all a bunch of malarkey.
Mm-hmm. And they weren't only dozens of dead bodies, but then it was also, the Tom Thumb at XYZ Street has gas.
And yes.
And so hundreds of people would head that way.
And it's not.
And then they wouldn't have gas, so now they've wasted a gallon of gas trying to get there, mm-hmm. only to be turned away.
Yeah, we were doing
it. It really
that.
Is kind of like the fog of hurricane war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's just rumors and stuff, and you're trying to make sense of everything. And I think we did a pretty good job of just laying down the facts of what happened.
Somebody called, and there was an Albertsons at Mobile Highway back then. And said, the Albertsons on Mobile Highway is open. You need to put that on your website. Well, luckily, I think it was Sheila Ingram had gone to Osceola Golf Course to check on the damage there. And so I had her swing by, and she said, no, those are the employees. There was a crowd, but no, those are the employees. And the manager said, we'll meet at 2 o'clock on whatever day it was to assess the damage to the store, and I can tell you when to get back to work. But no, somebody drove by, saw a crowd, assumed the Albertsons was open. If we had just posted that, there would have been 1,000 people who were looking for water, food,
and
whatever.
And then upset with the news journal. Exactly. And false information.
And so we decided early on that unless it's somebody we trust, government agency, police, whomever.
Or see it with our own eyes.
Or see it with our own eyes. We weren't going to put anything on the website. And I just wonder with Twitter and Instagram and all this other stuff.
I think that would be very hard to manage now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. There is a rush to try to get in as soon as possible and then fix mistakes later as you go. And I don't really like that way of working. But hey, I got to get back to you. The important question, was the golf course okay?
I think they had closed it for a while, but the...
important question, sir. Golf course is okay.
I think it has survived over the years. One of the things that made me feel good was we had almost 40 people who were homeless, who came to work every day, who put out the paper, who lived, some just had a trash bag full of clothing, and they stayed there because they understood what our role in the community was. And when you walk outside and you see the publisher of a newspaper flipping burgers, because if you remember, Denise mm-hmm. made sure we had a hot meal, at least one hot meal a day, whether it was breakfast or lunch or something at dinner time. But when you see the publisher of the newspaper flipping burgers and you see department heads out actually selling papers, you remember we had them out hawking papers at corners? I think we were giving them away at one point.
And people were stunned we had the paper out.
Yeah.
Yes.
We didn't deliver that Friday or that Saturday, but we got Friday's paper with Sunday and
on
Saturday's
Sunday.
Paper with Monday.
Yeah. And we tried to give out as many
as we could.
Because we were in information mode at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Need to Know was the one page we had. Mm-hmm. What hospitals are open? Here's some ATMs that are open. You can get, I think they put like a $20 limit on the amount of cash you could get. Here's where you get MREs and tarps and water. That one picture that we had pictures throughout the old news journal building, that one picture of the girl with a big smile on her face carrying the case of water.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Thrilled. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that spoke volumes.
On her shoulder.
I know the one you're talking about. Those posts just stick in your mind, man.
And the shots of, I think it might have been Ben Twingley who took the shot at Perdido Key where it looked like a dollhouse, where just the front of it had been ripped off. And it looked like a bar.
Oh, you could see the inside of the dollhouse.
Yeah, you could see right through it like you would, like you'd set up a little dollhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Another picture stood with me was that front page picture. The guy's name was Eric something. It was a young African-American man on the front, and he just looked like he's lost and just like in terror. And I just remember that photo stuck in my head. I remember his name, Eric, but I don't remember the last name. Just like, what do we do now? It was just... You know, I mean, you could see the agony and despair in his face.
Yep, I do remember that. There was another one. I was actually I didn't stay at the News Journal the night of the hurricane. I was stationed at the Emergency Operations Center, which actually the roof flew off of in the middle of the night. It was before the new one was built. The new one was supposed to have opened the month before, but got delayed. But the day after the storm, I went out with the sheriff's deputies and Sheriff McNesby. We went to Grand Lagoon first, and then we kept going to Perdido Key to check on Perdido Key. And we finally get over the bridge to Perdido, only we were allowed to drive over that bridge because they hadn't declared it structurally sound. But we did it anyway. And we get over the bridge and turn the curb. The road was gone. It was just sand. And there was just this one guy. The island had pretty much vacated completely, but there was this one man that was just walking where 98 should have been, down what used to be the road, which is now 6 feet of sand. It looked like a scene out of Mad Max. There was just one guy walking on just miles of sand. That's all you can see, and condos in the back, half a mile away. And we finally get up to him. I'm like, "What are you doing, sir?" And he is like, "I've been walking for miles." He had stayed in a condo. Which he was not supposed to have done. He had stayed in a condo throughout the hurricane. He didn't evacuate like he should have. And he said that the condo actually held to the point where he survived, but it had been gutted. I just looked at him like, you need to get in the car with us.
Yeah.
And come, we'll get you to the nearest shelter. So there's this very panoramic shot I have that you see nothing but this one little ant figure walking to you.
I know. I remember that photo, too. I do remember that one.
What lessons do you think this community has learned from Ivan looking back 15 years later?
I think, like I said earlier, I think that it really brings a sense of community. It's like the military bond. I don't want to say that we suffered like anything near what military members do, but you have that connection. We've struggled together, and so you have that bond, that connection that comes with a struggle. Also, on the flip side of this, we learned through Ivan never to take a hurricane lightly.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say. I mean, I'm from this area, and I remember anytime a hurricane was coming, hurricane party, and all that kind of stuff. That stopped after Ivan.
Yeah.
It was no longer, a jovial occasion. We take these things much more seriously, and it is because of Ivan.
Yeah. My first summer here, it was Earl and George, and I remember getting a call from one of the beach bars. They said, "Well, where did it make landfall?" Near so-and-so. "Well, no, I need to know exactly where." I thought, "Well, what difference does it make?" "Oh, we're having a party out here, and there's two people that are close, and we want to figure out who wins the pool." But after that, there weren't any pools about storms after that.
I think that's one of the major legacies.
Yeah.
Now, we have, each of us, gone on to different careers since then. I started here at WWF in August.
You have a great radio voice, if I might say.
Thank you. It all has to do with the electronics here. So, Troy, tell us what you've...
I left the News Journal in January after 30 years. I still love those people over there. I love that newspaper. I don't like it when people badmouth the News Journal, so don't do it if you're around me just because I'm not there. Don't think I'm going to echo you. They do hard work over there. But in August, I started working in marketing at Pensacola State College. I promised myself I would never go into marketing or public relations because...
The dark side.
Well, no, because I didn't want to sell stuff I don't believe in. Yeah. I'm not the kind of person who can push something just because they're a client. I believe in Pensacola State College. I mean, I'm honored to be doing that kind of work. If I'm going to sell something, I'm glad it's education.
Katie, what keeps you busy these days?
I left the News Journal in 2014 and started working with E.W. Bullock Agency, which is a public relations, marketing, and advertising agency. And so for the past 4 years, I have been doing public relations work and using my news experience to go on the flip side of it and be on the other side, other perspective. And I still work with a lot of my old News Journal colleagues with what I do now. So.
And that also was one of the legacies of Ivan. I think people understood our role better in the community, that we're trying to help the community, trying to push the community forward, get back on our feet. Well, thank you both.
Absolutely.
For taking the time. I hope these memories of Ivan aren't replaced by memories of another storm or natural disaster, because
Amen.
I've had enough of it.
And
yeah.
Our prayers for everyone in the Bahamas and elsewhere.
And Panama City.
Affected
yeah.
by Dorian.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank
Good
you, Tom.
You,
can I ask one question?
Sure.
I'd be fascinated to hear your answers.
Yeah.
You too, Tom. There have been a lot of hurricanes since then, mm-hmm. a lot of coverage of hurricanes since then.
Absolutely.
Do you think the coverage by what we see nationally can capture what it's like inside this, having lived through it, can capture what it's like covering from ground zero?
I mean, I think sometimes these guys do go into the communities and spend a lot of time. I really think it depends on the storm, the network. But yeah, they're not going to know the communities like the local reporters, not going to know the barbecue joints to go to see, check in on,
yeah.
you know, see if they're, you know, the community places that everyone loves. So, no, it's always going to help if you got local feet on the ground. I think they do, you know, their best. I mean, we've had to go into foreign communities and try to do stories, too, and you always do your best. But, yeah, when you know the terrain, it's always going to be easier.
I absolutely think at face value they do a great job of getting to the scene and making sure they have hands on the ground or showing you live what the community experienced. I think where the local news is vital is the after effect. Once the news crews leave, the local news stations and the local news TV, newspapers, and radio are still feet on the ground and covering it long-term aspect
the
of it.
The whole insurance stuff, which
yes.
is, you know, goes
right.
on forever, and
right.
we did so many stories on that. And, you know, they don't stay for that kind
no.
of stuff. You know, the people months later looking at their slab and saying, I'm fighting with the insurance company on whether it's caused by wind or rain, you know, I mean,
yep.
yeah, they can't tell those stories. And we're around, so we get the aftermath.
And we're feeling it, too, because we're going through it as well. So.
And the other thing is that summer, you know, Ivan was followed by Jean, which was another monstrous storm. And then later in the year was the big tsunami
yeah,
over
that,
in Indonesia. So all of a sudden it's like people are saying, well, Pensacola must be back on its feet. Everything must be back to normal. No. Well, I don't see anything on the Weather Channel about it. No, because they've gone on to other disasters and they cover other things. They don't stick around for
absolutely.
The aftermath.
And the rebuilding.
Right.
And, what was the building group that came about?
Rebuild Northwest Florida.
I mean, all those stories. No, they're covering the damage.
The immediate damage.
The immediate
yeah.
thing, but mm-hmm. the aftermath can be just as, I mean, for some people it was worse. Having
absolutely.
To deal with insurance yeah, and stuff like that.
That 2004-2005 hurricane season was just, I mean, I believe both years, they went beyond the name storms and then went into the Greek alphabet.
Yeah, that's right.
There were so many yep. of them. I think Florida got hit by, I got loaned out to South Florida. So it was Charlie,
mm-hmm.
Francis,
right. Ivan,
Gene. Yep. And then the next year we got hit by Dennis.
Right.
And then Katrina came by and it was still 115 mile an hour winds where we were. It closed down our airport for 3 days because I got stuck in North Carolina. And then Hurricane Rita
yeah.
went right by again and did the exact same thing like 2 weeks later. It was just a
yeah.
two-year period yeah. of getting...
Was it Wilma in there, too?
Yes,
Wilma
was
yes.
that year, right.
At least they were moving more than one
yes.
or 2 miles an
oh.
hour
yes.
like Dorian. I've never seen a storm
no.
like that.
I mean, you could walk faster.
Yeah, literally. You could walk to evacuate. Yeah.
Unless you're on an island.
Yes.
And nowhere to go.
Yep.
I feel for that whole area. It's going to... It's going to be a very long recovery. And I hope that the news crews continue to go back and cover it.
A lot of people who were affected by Michael feel they've been forgotten.
I felt terrible because it did not get the coverage that even Ivan got.
Right.
And it was a worse storm.
Mm-hmm.
So.